Join the Wide Whale team May 29th at 3 p.m. Eastern for part two of our three-part virtual event series, Voice of the Resident. For part two, we will look specifically at residency. Using AI topic analysis, we've analyzed the free text of 400,000 Google reviews from residents of hundreds of top multifamily groups, including the NMHC Top 50, to identify how often 50 key topics are mentioned by residents. By filtering for and analyzing the topics by life cycle stage, we can isolate which topics are more influential during residency, versus tour, or renewal. Go to widewhale.com/data to sign up or find it in the Revise community. That's widewhale.com/data.
Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this interview has been a long time in coming. I know last year, I think it was, we repeatedly ran into each other at various conferences across the country. I think Las Vegas, Phoenix, I may be leaving some out. I think it's about time we get on and do an interview.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate it.
So I'm interested. So today's conversation, obviously, for listeners, for viewers, is going to be about business intelligence. I think Elizabeth probably she's probably forgotten more about business intelligence than most of us know at this point in time. So I'll be interested to pick her brain, but I thought it would be good, Elizabeth, if we started with sort of a definition of terms, or at least terms that you think are germane to a conversation like this, just for our audience to wrap their heads around.
Absolutely. I appreciate that because it's always good to set the table before you start eating. And we want to do that here today. I was a real estate person for many years. And so this kind of world of data, I'm more coming at it from a real estate operator perspective than from a data scientist or a engineer perspective. But I've learned a lot over the years working with and at technology companies as kind of the business stakeholder, and terms are important. Business objectives are important. We are a data platform. So our primary purpose is to do what we call ETL work, which is extract data from core systems. So primary systems are generally in the multifamily world. Kind of look at the operating system of the property management systems. We extract the data, we transform it, and that's really our IP is the data model, the transformation layer. And then we load the data. So the L, ETL, is loading it and kind of pushing it into its end state use. BI is a business intelligence or front end visualization tool. So BI softwares could be Tableau, Power BI, Domo. There are quite a few out there that are not industry specific. And in each industry, technology solutions like ours come up and say, okay, our industry is totally different. So we need to have a solution that uses our dictionary, commonly used data, and the dimensions and the structure. So like in real estate, it's, you know, oftentimes it's by date, but it's also by property, by unit type or bedroom count. So all the things that are really specific to multifamily, and our data visualization tools need to be able to support those dimension data sets in a way that makes it easy to do a report or a visualization on things like, I want to know what my ad source is, you know, my cost per ad source for two bedrooms, which is, you know, not just a simple query. It's kind of a dimension query. So that's business intelligence is really the visualization. And you can use, you know, off the shelf solutions, but then you have to have someone kind of make it multifamily specific.
Sure.
Or you can go with an industry solution. ETL, the transformation layer is what does a lot of what we talk about with standardization and normalization, really making the data common and consistent so that if you have multiple source systems like PMSs, a lot of owners have different management groups. Those different management groups, they may all be on Yardi, but they may be storing data in different ways. So how do you get it into a common and consistent format? That's kind of the goal and purpose of a standardization or a common data model in order to make everything occupancy means occupancy. That's kind of the big one because every company has like slightly different definitions of how they want to see things. And these tools should have the flexibility to let people kind of look at things defined in the way that they want to. So I think I got through most of them. Did I miss any?
You didn't. You did use IP. Your IP is something. So just for
intellectual property. That's the lawyer in me saying, you know, like here's the important stuff. Here's the stuff that like isn't usually people when we're referring to IP is like the stuff that's our special sauce. Like what you're not pulling from off the shelf. It can be everything from your knowledge of the industry and how you suggest or put together KPIs for us. It's our transformation layers, our common model. So how we take data from all these sources and make it common and consistent. That's kind of the true value of our platform is that you can take data from different sources. And then by putting it into a common consistent format, you can push it into a BI tool, or you can use it for feeding other applications like AI tools. If you want to know sentiment analysis, or you want to be able to run, you know, certain analysis with data in an AI application, you need to have good data.
That makes sense. Yeah. I want to maybe take a little bit of a trip back in time because business intelligence it's not new to our industry, but there have been a lot of hurdles, a lot of impediments. You just sort of started to broach some of those. Yeah. If we go back in time, I want to say, please correct me. Let's say this was 10 years ago. I was sitting at a conference and I was listening to a gentleman at a REIT, I think. Maybe it wasn't a REIT, but it was a big company. And they were just introducing BI as a, I'll call it a concept, but I think it was a real construct at that time. And they were talking about dashboards. And then let's say fast forward 2 years later, I saw that same guy do a presentation and they had built 480 dashboards and he thought BI was the worst thing ever. He took it too far. Anyway, yeah. The reason I want to take a trip back and then advance forward to today, talk about why it's been so difficult to get BI into a form or a fashion that makes it good for a business to use.
Great question. So I personally am completely biased when it comes to technologies, as if you're looking at a real estate company and you're building technology, there are very few companies that are big enough that the money that's spent to build tech correctly makes sense on an ROI basis. When you have technologists within a real estate company, it can be challenging if you don't have a good technology team, because their job is to interpret business objectives into a way that can be utilized in kind of a real world environment. And real estate people are very specific in what they want, but everyone in an organization wants something different.
That's
right.
There's
no such thing. It's like, and Bob does it the right way and Larry does it the right way. It's completely two different ways. So it's hard to support within, not every tech person, IT person, dev person that works at a real estate company is nodding right now because they know it's just there's a lot of stakeholders and a lot of different ways. And that's how you end up with 400 different dashboards that have been built out kind of without something to scale it. You're having to build it out kind of very ad hoc and very siloed. And each one of the reports, you're starting from scratch. And that is very challenging to do, and oftentimes leaves the internal stakeholders going like, well, now we can't support this thing going forward unless we have these people, and the team gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Cut to like the technology companies don't always quite understand, unless they've been in the real estate side of things, what challenges real estate operators have. And if you built a BI tool and you don't realize that, oh, your customers use multiple different property, why would they do that? Well, they would do that if they used multiple managers, but there's lots of clients who also use just one because they have their own in-house. And if you started with just one company that's using it in-house and built a platform that only supports one, and then you, it might take you a couple of different clients before you have one that says to you, well, I use four different management companies, and doesn't maybe even realize that being on the same, even if all those management companies are on the same system, that that still could have challenges in terms of like financials. You know, they're all different account tree structures. Like, how do you combine your financials without having some way to do that? So the business stakeholders and the real estate are on the real estate side, and the technology people, as an industry, we haven't always done the greatest job of melding those two. And BI, I think, has definitely been one of those things where it's not super easy to scale it specifically to an industry. And so mistakes have been made. And I talked to a lot of companies where like they go, well, we wish we could go back in time, but they didn't know that they were going to end up buying four different property management companies along the way, or they didn't realize that the data structure was going to be challenging to, you know, they changed from one PMS to another and didn't know they were going to lose a lot of their historic data. So, you know, it's like, you don't know what you don't know. And then once you kind of go down the road, you go, oh, wish we'd known that back then. So now it's like, you know, the land of BI for multifamily 2.0. You're seeing a lot of companies coming up and understanding kind of the business objectives of having all these AI applications is really driving a lot of the innovation to keep things consistent, and standardizing things, because that unlocks a lot of the value that we as an industry aren't getting from AI applications, because the data is just not in a structure that makes it easy to use.
Do you, you mentioned drivers there, and yes, everything that you just said, so true. I've been in the business for longer than I'm willing to admit right now, but I've seen it iterate over time, and it's become more and more complicated over time because it's maturing. It's taking on a level of sophistication that it just hasn't had in the past, and it's all very good, I think. But it needs structure. It needs discipline. It needs to stop being an unruly teenager and turn into an actual mature adult. So yeah. I'm interested. You use the word driver, AI driving a lot of this, and people seeing the importance in AI, but do you think the driver is lenders? Is the driver a sophisticated owner? Is the driver an asset manager? What is the kind of the human behind this that is the driver?
I'll say yes, all of the above. I mean, I think a lot of it is, having been a lender, I don't think we were driving much of that, force function of getting people's data into a more consistent format. But as underwriting becomes tougher and tighter, you're constantly looking for validation for your underwriting analysis. And if you don't have that data to be able to push to your lender and say, you know, this is what insurance rates are averaging in this market, you can have confidence in my underwriting, then you're not using data effectively. And I think that the need to really sharpen your pencil and get to the tightest possible NOI for loan proceeds, because with higher interest rates, it just means that every penny counts. That, I think, is probably, it's being driven more by need for loan proceeds. I think it's driven in large part due to AI technologies that people want to use. It's consolidation of the industry. You know, there's been a lot of consolidation in the big property management companies, a lot of acquisitions, a lot of consolidation. So that's obviously driving it, because if you're a property management company that has, you know, three acquisitions last year, each one of those companies that you're buying, that's a data issue. Are you going to report on how are you going to marry all that data to be able to give portfolio-wide reporting? That can push a lot of these initiatives. The supporting technology is a lot better. So having it used to be really expensive to have data warehouses, and storage was expensive. That the cost going way down, I think, is also unlocked for a lot of people having their own data warehouse and wanting to have more internal data governance, have more of a focus. You know, ULI put out a report only a couple of years ago talking about like data is gold. And real estate people know this. I mean, it is a huge commodity in what we do as an industry, but the data is just, it's expensive to license and it's hard to use. So how do you solve for that? Well, a lot of companies are trying to solve for it internally. And as an industry, we haven't done a great job of collaborating and solving for that collectively.
You know, you bring to mind, it sort of touches this area of the business, or maybe it completely does, but you bring to mind MITS, something that was developed like 20 years ago. And the way I define it in my head is trying to get all these disparate systems to sort of coordinate and at least talk to one another, speak to one another so that we can integrate in a more seamless fashion, right? Yeah. And it's no different in data. I mean, maybe to just put a real exclamation point on the points that you're making, how I label a state might be to, like, I might spell out the word Missouri versus just using the initials for the state. It's something as little and as nuanced as that that makes it difficult.
Yeah. I mean, we see a property will get onboarded and you've got managers writing Google as their ad source in five different ways.
Yeah.
So that's just like, it's a small thing, but if you know, I use Excel as kind of like the best example of like, you know how when you have to sort in Excel by state or by ad source, like if it's Google or Google Analytics, it's going to look, technology doesn't always necessarily guess or know that those are two different things. So that's a process of just getting your data in one place, in one shape. But then you've got like this weird stuff that we've been seeing. It's like, oh, you got the same name of the property in, you know, like Whispering Willows, there's like 20 of them across the country. And it's like, oh, okay. So there's a thing with, you've just got a lot of redundancies of a lot of bad addresses, a lot of things that make it challenging to feed LLMs because they need large amounts of data to come up with really valuable insights. But those valuable insights are how you get context in real estate for whether your property is operating well or not. Like, if you don't know and you're only benchmarking against yourself, you may think that, you know, your top property is amazing and your bottom property is horrible, but it turns out that they're all performing above the market, or they're all performing below the market, but you think you're okay because you're looking at rents. Our data sets are fairly limited when it comes to being able to do true, deep dive analysis of where a property should be operating based on age, size, location, lease up status, like all the things. It will be nice when that world is available. And you can ask questions like, you know, how is a market trending? Because everything is in context, it's like, it's micro, but it's part of the macro world, right? So like, is job growth, how's the age of the, you know, population, what are jobs doing? You know, is it shifting migration patterns? All of these things are really impactful when you're looking at trying to do predictive models and look forward and say, okay, because the last 10 years have done this, where are we in the cycle of this particular community? That's a data question. You need to have your data available and in the right format, structure, and sufficient volume to be able to query and ask those questions.
So I have a question. I think, and I've asked this question many times, and I think I understand it, but I would love just for listeners and viewers, the difference between a data lake and a data warehouse, what is the difference, and why is it important to take data from a, say, call it a lake, and turn it in, or I guess deposit it then into the warehouse?
You'd be better off asking my CTO, who's a data scientist. It's something to do with like the versus structured versus unstructured, and so how you query data kind of has to do based on kind of what particular tools. The value of having structured data, or at least kind of curated structured data, is kind of, you ostensibly would have less errors in some of the assumptions that technologies have to make, which sometimes they're not always super strong on making those assumptions. But it kind of depends on the customer. Like, I always tell people, start with your business goals, because technologists, you work backwards. Like, what are you hoping to accomplish? Do you just want to have all your data in one place? Or are you looking to do something very specific? Because in real estate, or at least non-technical worlds, it's always more is better. Like, people will say, I want the option to do everything. You're like, well, sometimes adding too much optionality can actually reduce functionality. So that's the question, is like, what do you really want to do with it? Like, what are your immediate use cases and needs that you're trying to solve for? And then, you know, kind of your 5-10 year plan, if you have thought ahead that far, and that can kind of help guide as to like what solutions you're looking at. Good consultants are great in this area to kind of help with getting to, you know, how do we set this up? How do we structure it? What off-the-shelf tools, if there are any, are the best for our purposes? So, yeah, we do store our clients' data for them. So that's kind of like part of the process, but we can also plug into their data repository and kind of push the data through if that's something that they want. It's kind of, there's no one size fits all in technology, especially when you're talking enterprise solutions. Like, you kind of have to work with each client and go where they are, because they're always using like multiple, you know, data sources or systems that they want to be able to kind of plug in. So that's kind of, you go through and say, all right, what's your tech stack? What do you want to use this stuff for?
That's right. I think the really important takeaway there is that you always start with the end in mind. I think if we go back and reference the gentleman that did the presentation like 2 years removed, you know, he was excited. Then he gets back and he's doing the presentation. He's like, I have 400 dashboards. There was no kind of like, what are we trying to accomplish here? And as such, you had dashboard creep, and suddenly you're realizing that the price of water in Tulsa, Oklahoma on a Tuesday afternoon at 4 p.m. doesn't really matter in the bigger scheme of things. Let's pay attention to the 8 to 10 drivers of our business, and maybe some subsets of that data to make informed business decisions. It's kind of like the just because you can doesn't mean you should axiom.
And that's another reason why the kind of technology gets exciting, is like what you want to do. And we all call this AI, but it really isn't. It's just like business rules around this stuff. Like, what are the things that are moving the needle the most? So like, tell me what drivers are having the biggest impact on my NOI. Because to your point, if it's, you're looking at water, but you're missing like the forest through the trees, because like the water bill doesn't really matter, doesn't really, you know, pet rent doesn't really, unless you're just like trying to get just like those tiny little incremental changes. But first look at, you know, what's your days on market, like, or your days to turn? Right. Are you falling within the market, or are you, you know, taking five times as long to turn a unit as everyone else. Well, you know, sometimes that kind of thing could be way more impactful than trying to drop some utility expense or something like that. So like really seeing where am I failing or where am I succeeding, can kind of set those as your watermarks so that you can kind of learn from those, I think is important.
I've oftentimes the BI tools that I've worked with in the past, which I'll leave unnamed, but they so when you work in the business for a long bit of time, your gut sense becomes attuned to what drives a business, what doesn't drive a business. And I'm speaking about multifamily specifically, but you kind of, I often describe it as like you walk out to a property, you open the door to the business, and what comes out is either a smell of dirty socks or a smell of apple pie. And you can kind of sort of sense that the business is operating well or it's not. And then what BI does, or at least in my world, was it validates those things that I think are missing in that dirty sock scenario, right? Be it inventory is taking too long to get on online, my salesperson is not well trained, and so on and so forth. Yeah, it's a great validator for that information.
What are your outliers? And
right,
like we have goals and alerts, which I like, because it's basically it's like, okay, set what your target is and then notify me if I'm missing something. So, you know, I know in past organizations where I've been on the real estate side of things, like I didn't really need to know down to the level of minutiae that some of the analysts did. Like we had a really big portfolio. So having someone tell me that, you know, a small KPI had been missed, not that important. But if a property had gone 3 months at, you know, below 90% occupancy and no one had told me, I would have lost my mind. Like, so what is it that are the things? And then being able to define within an organization, okay, Mike gets to know when something is really off. And this is what really off is. Like, let's keep him posted if something is going sideways. And then what are the guardrails for the rest of the team, such that if they have 10 properties or 20 properties that they're trying to manage, that if something goes outside or askew, that you surface those types of things and make sure that there's nothing that gets missed is kind of the, that's like your first rule of thumb is like, all right, let's solve for the worst case scenario of, we missed something, which is like everyone's nightmare of, you know, how did this happen for like 2 months that something has gone like really sideways and no one knew about it? That's kind of like a good use case for BI. But then like the flip side is like, okay, what are those tiny little marginal little minutiae that if we could just do this, then we're adding to the bottom line? Like, what are the tiny changes that could be made? And am I doing it anywhere or I'm not doing it anywhere? And let's, you know, kind of test things and see whether it's worth the impact, whether it's worth the NOI. We see a lot of our, we work with technology companies who want to show their clients like what the ROI is by showing comparative analysis of parts of their portfolio where they've rolled out the pilot versus part of their portfolio where they haven't done the pilot, and say, okay, let's do an apples to apples so that we can show that over the last 3 months, we've been able to add value, because that's kind of the whole purpose of doing these pilots and technology implementations, is that it does provide a benefit. So being able to quantify that benefit is also kind of, you know, comparing one manager to another manager or another region to another region. Doing it historic, seeing trends, like that's really the value of business intelligence, is that you're getting to see your performance in a way that's holistic, which is, you know, pretty important when you're either managing an asset or have investors that you have to, you know, account for. So
yeah,
that's, I like it that way.
Join the Wide Whale team May 29th at 3 p.m. Eastern for part two of our three-part virtual event series, Voice of the Resident. For part two, we will look specifically at residency. Using AI topic analysis, we've analyzed the free text of 400,000 Google reviews from residents of hundreds of top multifamily groups, including the NMHC Top 50, to identify how often 50 key topics are mentioned by residents. By filtering for and analyzing the topics by life cycle stage, we can isolate which topics are more influential during residency, versus tour, or renewal. Go to widewhale.com/data to sign up or find it in the Revise community. That's widewhale.com/data.
I think I see. Please push back and correct me if I'm wrong here. So my experience thus far with BI tools, great for everything that we just talked about, doing some trending analysis, doing some year-over-year comparisons, month-over-month comparisons, things of that nature. The real power in my head is this sort of next iteration of business intelligence that becomes more predictive in nature. Would you say we're in the early innings of setting up this sort of predictive nature about BI, or are we already there, or kind of what is your sense of that?
Well, you can do some of it with just business rules, like, you know, show me my trending going forward. There's definitely, if you have a good data scientist and you are looking at sufficiently clean data sets, you can do some predictive modeling, like going forward and say, mm-hmm. You know, I want to see what this particular market should do over the course of the next few years. It's hard to do at scale for many companies. Like, you know, there aren't a lot of tools out there that are offering forward-looking predictive models on the AI side. And I think a lot of that has to do with just not sufficient amounts of clean data to run these LLMs. Like, they require a lot of data and not necessarily the most accurate if you don't feed them the right data. Or if you give, I was very fortunate, my last company, I had a data scientist that kind of taught me how like training models work, and that like you constantly have to test your assumptions and that those assumptions then change over time. So you're constantly like recalibrating what you think versus what you know. But yeah, there's so much that can be done, but it does require, like, you know, I think a lot more data in order to be super efficient. Like, the data sets that we look at in real estate, I don't think are sufficiently granular or in volume enough that you can really make confident future projections. I'm sure someone's going to prove me wrong on that, but
the comments are lighting up now.
I know.
Do you foresee? I think I was having this discussion with you just the other day. Forgive my memory, but we were talking about there was an example where a computer beats a guy in a chess game, and also in a Go. I think I was having trouble remembering the name of the game, but I think it's called Go. But I say all that to say this: is there a scenario where at some point these models are sophisticated enough to create their own scenario, thus by creating their or thereby creating their own data
sets? I think so. That's my theory. And again, not a data scientist, but I think that there is an argument to be made that if you had enough data. Uh-huh. And looking at all these other industries that have been able to accomplish some of these things, that you are able to come up with actually impactful outcomes on things like, well, you know, this particular submarket where we're buying, mm-hmm. I want to buy, you know, or I have a 100-unit building, and that submarket looks exactly like another submarket across the country.
Yeah.
And on the inputs that are the most impactful. Mm-hmm. So like I had a data scientist for us who ran something, and it was looking at concentration of demographics in a particular market was like, you know, year built, which is like, yeah, no doubt, but like the concentration of how many people lived had a higher impact on rents than other things. Like, so looking at like how many people live in that concentration, the annual incomes, the age, those are things that like might have a greater weighting, such that if you're trying to take a submarket that doesn't have a lot of velocity, but you take another market that also doesn't have a lot, but has the same weighted drivers, that you could apply and you could say, okay, you meeting our large language model would be able to say, okay, I'm able to take the sales that happened or the data that's occurring in this submarket and kind of in the aggregate, create a good model that says when the submarket looks like this and X, Y, and Z occurs, like people are, migration is occurring, that we can apply and say, okay, rents are going to drop by 7%. Now, the question is like, is it missing outliers? Is it missing things like that particular property is on the north side of the street and that, you know, so you'd have to make sure that's where like having a lot of data is really impactful, because it's the thing that you miss that could be the thing that is really having the highest impact on, you know, all real estate is so. We're snowflakes, but it is unique, right? Like it's like the weirdest things. Student housing, it's got to be walking distance. And, you know, what if there's a bar that opens up right next door? Now your rents go way up, like the most popular bar. But those are the things that are like hard to, unless you have a lot of historic data, unless you're looking at it in large swaths of the country, to get to a predictive model that says, yes, if this, then that, because it's seen it enough times that it can have a level of confidence that it can apply it, then your data could be, or your outputs could be garbage.
And, you know, you bring up, or we've sort of the human in this equation, right? We all love tech. We all love what tech can do for us. We love what tech will be able to do for us in the future. But to use your point about the bar across the street, the very popular bar, you still need a person on the ground or someone in the market to validate inputs.
Yes.
Right? And even if the technology says this is an outlier, you still need that.
Yeah. Well, we all know this, right? Like you've looked at reports where like, that's garbage. Like it's like the worst. I'm always super careful to add, and I try in every conversation about all this stuff, like the humans are still super important in this equation, because we've all seen properties where the manager is beloved and manages to have outperform despite all these things that suggest otherwise. So like there's definitely unquantifiable human elements too. People just like the aesthetic. They like the color of the building, or they like the views that you can only get from that particular floor. There's just a lot of things that make having broad brush conclusions when it comes to data hard. But that's where it gets interesting, where, you know, if you have the data on that particular property, you can see, is the trend specific to the property, or is it tied to that manager? And the second she started, things started getting much better. You know, what is it about her? And the nice thing is you can then say, okay, like, you know, it's how I used to manage salespeople is like, it's always, you start with kind of like, looking at your funnel. So here it's like, you look at all your data sets and then you're trying to target what's the thing that makes this either outperform or underperform the comp set. And then can I replicate that? Or can I look at other properties that maybe are similar and try and solve for whatever issues that property is having, whether it's staffing issues. Like that one, I think is something I really want to drill into more, because I think it's super impactful. And I don't think we've done enough as operators to really drill into what is the impact of staff on performance, the amount of time a tenant has stayed or a manager has stayed at the property. What about the resident? Like, what are we looking at from a, you know, we're doing some more interesting sentiment analysis, but like, what's the temperature of this building? Is it, you know, everyone there is miserable? Are they happy there? Most people would say that probably correlates to the how much they're paying in rent and how nice the property is. But okay, great. Then if that's the baseline, then what are the outliers that we need to look at and say, if someone lives in a building that's dilapidated, but they're all still happy, what's causing that? Like what's keeping them happy? Is it the manager? Is it something else? Like what are the things that even in the face of what we anecdotally would think would be like, oh, if it's this, it's a class A building with tons of amenities, everyone loves it. Well, maybe not. Like, okay, why do we have turnover that's so high? What's the issue here? And then as a, you know, kind of the manager, the regionals can start to go, okay, now I know what I need to fix. And if I have a property that's doing really well, that's a like property, how do I figure out how to clone what's happening here? Right.
That's right.
I'm curious as an operator, if that's what you guys like, did you use your BI for that or did you do those exercises?
Yeah, it was all part of a kind of a structure. We used scaling up as a structure to govern like an overall governance of the business. But part of that governance through meeting mechanisms, the BI was in the room. So we would literally bring the BI dashboards up on a big screen, red light, yellow light, green light, you know, and we would not focus necessarily on the greens. We would acknowledge them. We would use them as an opportunity to celebrate successes. Yeah. Yellows, we were, you know, something looks like it's about to go off the rails. Is it really? Is it not? What might, but let's ask some questions downstream to make sure. Yeah. And then those red lights, I think to your point, we were using those red lights to get things back on the rails. And or, hey, look, we know that's red. We're okay with the red. Here's the reason why we're okay with the red, because whatever business context, it's falling outside of the rules right now. And yeah. But we all know that. But we're not losing track of it either. At some point, we have to fix that broken staircase in that one building that we're not occupying right now. Right? Yeah. So we don't lose track of things like that. But yes, to answer your question, we use that as I don't want to reduce it to a data point, but it was a data point or a set of data points that we used in combination with a lot of other data points to drive decision-making processes.
Yeah. It's kind of a roll-up view that helps to guide, but it helps you be proactive as opposed to reactive.
That's right.
Like, you know, if you start to see something is going from that green to yellow, you know, or that yellow to red, how do we stop whatever is happening if that's possible, or encourage different behavior? Are there things that you can do to resolve? I also have, you know, having been on the asset management side of things, we also were doing acquisitions, and I was always surprised at how little we used our own data. And in large part, it was because we weren't really in control of the structure of the data of all of our partners. So we couldn't really see a lot of visibility into anything but financials. But interestingly, like having those data sets, when you're looking at making an acquisition in a market, to be able to do comparative analysis and see how am I performing today? If I'm looking at this new asset, are there places where I can bring value? That's at least for us, that was hard. I assume that for folks, that's a hard thing to do unless you're going to take your, you know, new financials of a target asset and convert them into your current format. Like if you're looking at a lot of deals, that can be somewhat challenging. So at least our platform can do some comparative analysis by converting things into the same format, same structure, and then doing side by side. So that's kind of the the goal of having these tools is to track your track record, see historically how you're doing over time. Is this a seasonal thing, you know, month over month or quarter over quarter, year over year? Is this just, you know, last May, this is what happens, is like, you know, site tours fall off a map, or, you know, our conversion rates go way out because this is when people take vacation. So being able to kind of see and constantly taking your temperature, but with context, I think is my big learning, is like, without context, we all think we're doing great or horribly.
Of course.
But we're only comparing it to like a really small sample set.
It brings something to mind for me, and maybe you've already said this or implied it, but I think about organizations that have been around for a very long time, and their real estate business strategy is to buy and hold forever. They never sell anything. And if they do, it's just a little strategic one-off here and there. But they've owned real estate for 40, 50, 60 years, right? And they have very large portfolios and thus a lot of data. And now my gut tells me there are a lot of organizations, and some of them I've worked for, that have bought and sold properties over a very long bit of time and have archived a lot of data. So even though they don't own the real estate anymore, they still own the data sets. And is it fair to think that those data sets that have been archived could be put into a BI system and sort of forward analysis, like, hey, we got all this history.
Yeah, you can look at projections, but I mean, again, like, are you looking at it in a vacuum if you want to, like, because market conditions have such an impact. Sure. Where it becomes helpful is if you're trying to look at in a market, how are, you know, are things all trending in the same direction?
Yeah.
To kind of create your own baseline of the top and bottom performers. Like, things should be, if everything is up 3%, but you have one that's up 15% and one that is down 9%, like, your outliers obviously give you an opportunity for further analysis and review. So anytime you have like historic data, it does help to build kind of a more accurate future view, because you're kind of seeing everything, you know, in groups and how they're all moving. So I like getting a lot of historic data, because I always want to, like, more is better, isn't it? But it may, it, data scientists may disagree and be like, yeah, it doesn't really matter. Like, what happened before the last cycle? Like, who cares? You know, just too many inputs and outliers to see how that works.
I have a, so take a little bit of a, let's say, a right-hand turn or hard right. Okay. So today let's imagine for a second, you have a BI tool. Most of the data that is coming into the BI tool based on your PMS, right? Property management system.
Yeah.
A lot of it, the large portion of it is coming in. But from your perspective, my imagination tells me there are other data sources that aren't your PMS.
Oh, yeah.
What, like, if a company's thinking about putting a BI tool in place today, PMS is obvious. That's the obvious one. What other data sets do you think you should pipe in?
Well, that's their special sauce, Mike. That's like what people, they go, oh, my algorithm is like, it's it. And it is, it's like, whatever is your business thesis, you know, is like, that's what you're presenting to your investors or your owners as like the thing.
Right.
That, you know, it could be online reviews of your managers. It could be like what trainings they've completed, or it could be demographics, like, you know, what are the big drivers of industry or what makes a particular neighborhood. Crime scores, I think, are a big one for people. If you're doing ESG initiatives, there's some really interesting platforms that have a lot of environmental impact scores in a particular market that you could use to kind of show that you're selecting, your property selection is based on having you know, low impact environmentally sound areas. Lots of stuff that you could look at that could potentially, you know, it really is kind of dependent on the sponsor. A lot of them use their CRM data.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want more accurate lead kind of tying from the point of, you know, everyone comes in through the website.
Right.
So
drive by.
It's all a drive by. You know, but then like, okay, let's follow that customer's journey. Let's see, you know, they came to us on our Craigslist sourced leads. Do they have higher delinquencies than our Facebook leads are, you know, but that means not just tying it to the ad source, but also all the way through to your delinquency data and who's not making payments. And, you know, that's an interesting one. As a lender, I wanted to know, like, is it a predictive, if someone starts paying closer and closer to the date or starts making payments slightly farther out than they have been, sometimes that can be a predictor of someone, of a early predictor of delinquency, is how, like, if they were doing it on auto pay and then they stop, right. Like, there's all these different data points that you can start to, like, look at, like, oh, maybe this is, someone told me that he also looks at how many work orders they put in for complaints, and that that can also paint a picture of, like, a predictive model around someone, you know, a delinquency coming up. So these are things that you still need to tie the data together well from kind of your marketing funnel, if you're going to look at it that far back. And the PMSs don't always necessarily tie all of those things together nicely and cleanly. So a lot of these new, you know, CRM tools are definitely adding functionality in terms of lead attestation, which is like a struggle for you and I were at the Digital Conference talking about lead attestation.
That's right.
So painful. Yeah. But that's a good
one. I think I would also probably add consumer sentiment, or, you know, Google rating scores, reviews, and things of that nature. Same thing for team member sentiment, whatever survey platform you might use. But it leads to maybe a punchline question. If data is gold, you mentioned ULI earlier, Urban Land Institute, right? And data is gold. We've all known that for a very long bit of time. In that scenario, a lot of people who've been made king over the years decide, I like
everyone
my gold.
Everyone owns the data. I own it. You own it. We all own it. Everyone owns it.
Right. But we all own it in these sort of different, you know, places where we store our gold. Do you think people become protective in that, or they see that as an opportunity for a rev gen, meaning, great, Elizabeth, you want my data? It's X amount of dollars to get my data. And so does this other person, and everybody starts charging for the data. And, like, I only asked that question because I heard Mark Zuckerberg's going to start shutting off the data at Facebook.
Yeah. Well, if you have good data and you are able to charge for it, absolutely. Right. I think the question it becomes, like, have you done anything to transform, to make the data better? Or is it just that you're trying to, like, pass it through, in which case maybe it's more of an integration, which is a word in our industry that means every data connection is an integration. I've got to stop just being like, it's not really an integration, and just be like, yeah, sure, it's integration, because it's like either a term of art or it isn't. I'm not quite sure which of the two, but I think a lot of people just need to be thoughtful around how the data, like, I'm a big proponent of ethical data policies and treatment. Our residents are entrusting this is their housing. It's like their biggest expense. Having the ability to look at directionally what your community wants is very different than selling Bob Smith's email address to a provider that's going to spam him. You know, like, there's different ways to use data in ethical ways, and there's ways to do it that is arguably unethical. So having that's like a far along the lines of having a data strategy is like, now let's monetize it. Not the first thing you ask, but if you do get through that whole data journey of, we have a lot of data, we're putting it into one place, we're making it usable in a way that is secure and useful and meaningful, then yeah, the last stage would be, you know, now we got to monetize this. So right. I don't know if I see many real estate companies thinking that's a good idea. I think there'll definitely be more technology companies that see the value of providing data insights that their applications are able to. Hopefully it's more curated and thoughtful data insights that their platforms. But that's exactly what technology is expected to do. It's what people want. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're using a particular technology, they do want that technology to then tell them, what are you finding out? Not just
that's right.
for me as a user, but across the broad swath of all your users. What are you seeing? How do I compare? Tell me what I need to know, because you're the expert, right? If you're a tenant engagement app or a manager training app, or you know, a specific application that you've been brought in to do a certain use at a company.
That makes sense. Okay, we're coming up on an hour. Is there anything that I've not asked you that you think would be useful information for our viewers and our listeners?
Information. I'm like such a beat the drum to excess on this, which is, there's a value in having standardized clean data. Mm-hmm. It is a necessary and I was a regulatory attorney for years, so I know the value of having an unsexy role in business processes. Because that's one of those things where, like, no one really wants a regulatory attorney. No one really wants to spend time cleaning up their data. It seems like something that should just be done. And no one really wants to kind of like, because you're like, well, if everyone just put away their, you know, toys, then
right,
it'd be clean. Unfortunately, it's, you know, when you have 100 properties, each manager who then changes jobs every however many months isn't being taught to put their toys in the same exact box. So that's unrealistic. But that data, if it is in a standard consistent format, that's what can help drive meaningful business decisions. But you have to kind of make a commitment to what do you want to do with it, and not try and boil the ocean with, I want it to do everything, which is our, you know, our hope in real estate is that we can do everything all at right. once. You know, come up with a plan, a target, an end goal, an initiative that has real impact. And then, you know, kind of put a plan together for how you want to test little initiatives to see, you know, is having a data strategy right for our organization, or are we too busy to even think about it? Is there other people that can come in and help us to put this all together? And, you know, that's kind of my drum that I beat, which is, there are these amazing applications out there, and we as an industry have some work to do in order to be ready to take full advantage of them. Because as cool as they are, if anyone's done a chat on ChatGPT recently, and I do them all the time, they are super garbage if you put in like certain prompts that are not well thought out, or you don't give it data to consider,
right. you
know, ask it to validate, it makes stuff up. Really great. You just made that up. And it's like, yes, I did. So there's that. Garbage in, garbage out has become kind of like my least favorite thought that I have at least once a day. But
Only once?
Yeah. Maybe more. Maybe more. But always good to talk to you, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Thank you. I appreciate you both as a business person and also as a human. And I've had some incredible conversations with you. And I think what you're trying to do for the industry, what you are doing for the industry is really important work. And anything that I can do to support that along the way, I want to, and I'm willing to. So
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, this is fun. I get really excited about it. So I welcome anyone, and we're online, revolutionre.com. If anyone wants to reach out, I enjoy even having Mike and I just have conversations about like stuff, like, because there's a lot that can be done. There's some work to be done, but there's a lot that can be done, and it really could open a lot of avenues for the industry. So I appreciate the time.
True statement. Likewise for everyone else. Thanks, we'll see you next time. Multifamily Collective.
Have a good one.